Our Silent Killer, is a new book written by scientist Thomas Smith. In this self-help manual for diabetes and other blood sugar handling problems, you will learn the true cause of this disease and, more importantly, what you can do about it.
Insulin, Our Silent Killer is available from the American Freedom Network for only $25 postpaid. Call 1-800-205-6245.
It's extensively referenced with helpful tables to learn what foods are good and which ones are not. This is a must-read for everyone.
Dan here at the American Freedom Network, and I guess this morning is William Federer, and we're going to be talking about the Muslim faith, the growing crisis in the Middle East. And of course, the government insists that they have no intention of attacking Iran, and yet they're telling us that Iran is supplying all sorts of these explosive devices that are killing our people, and that Iran is sending agents into Iraq to foment the uprising there, and Iran is threatening to nuke Israel and is threatening to destroy the United States and Europe. But the United States has no intention of going to war with Iran, and yet Seymour Hersh, in his recent article and in a recent interview on Democracy Today, says there's a plan. They have a plan. Everything is in place. They can attack within 24 hours. So they're not being entirely forthright with us. And what would be the implications of an attack on Iran, and how would that be perceived by the rest of the Muslim world? Well, I think that we have to understand, really, the Muslim faith, the differences between the Shia Muslims and the Sunni Muslims, which goes back, almost 1,300 years, going back to the time of Muhammad, and who would lead the Muhammadan faith after Muhammad's death. And that's why, because the Shias believed it should be the descendants of Muhammad, the Sunnis believed it should be those that were followers of Muhammad at that time, but certainly great Muslim prophets. Anyway, under any circumstances, William Federer is going to be talking about that, or unless there's something else you wanted to talk about this morning, Bill. What did you want to talk about?
Well, Dr. Stan, it's great to be with you. I wrote a book entitled What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran.
All right, well, let's talk about
a history of Islam in the United States. And what I did is I give the 1,400-year history. Muhammad was born in 570 A.D., his dad died before he was born. His mom died when he was 6. His grandfather died when he was 8, so he was an orphan. He was taken in by his uncle when he was about 12, and his uncle was a textile merchant who would go on camel rides, the caravans. And so Muhammad would go through that area of the world and would hear the different religions that existed, the Zoroastrians in Persia, who believed in 7 levels of heaven and that paradise was this place with lots of women and, fulfillment of sensual pleasures. And the Zoroastrians had jinns or genies, and that was incorporated by Muhammad into his faith. The Arabs of Arabia had several hundred pagan gods. Each town or village had their favorite god, who was called Allah, which simply means the god. And Mecca, being the large city, the moon god was Allah, they had the moon god was male, the sun god was female, then the Venus, and then they had this Kaaba, this rock that they thought had fallen from the moon, and they would walk around. This is what the pagans did. We're talking hundreds of years before Muhammad. They'd kiss the rock, they'd fast one month out of the year, and all they'd bow 5 times a day toward this rock. So you can see how Muhammad incorporated that into his faith. And then the Jews had their scriptures, but this is 700 years before the printing press was invented, so the scriptures were very valuable and kept locked away in the synagogue. Besides, Muhammad couldn't read. And so Muhammad heard the oral stories, the Talmud and the Midrash, like the Apocalypse of Abraham and these different things, and they found their way into the Quran. And then the Christian faith in the area where Muhammad lived is where there were a lot of heresies. Most of them dealt with the nature of Christ and the confusion. It was settled for Orthodox Christianity in 325 AD at the Council of Nicaea, where they said Jesus is of one substance with the Father. But in the area of Arabia, there was Nestorianism, which said Jesus was all God. There was Arianism that said Jesus was little less than God. There were the Docetists that said Jesus had two natures, but they were inside of one body. There was the Monophysites. And then there were the Ebionites, who said that Jesus was a special instrument of God's salvation, but he was not divine. Anyway, Muhammad was actually married to his first wife. He was 20 and she was 50. He used to work for her for several years, and then, you know, she was widowed several times, and so she married him. But they were married by her cousin, who was an Ebionite Christian priest. And so these were the influences that went into Muhammad's theology. And he tells the story around 610 A.D. He went out into the desert, and like the desert fathers in early Christianity who would go out and praise, sort of like Elijah and John the Baptist, Muhammad followed that example and would go out and found a cave where he would pray. And he tells the story about being visited by a spirit. And the spirit squeezed him and told him to read, and he said, I cannot read. And the spirit squeezed him again, said to read. He said, I cannot read. The spirit squeezed him again, said to read. He said, I cannot read. Finally, he said he began to just recite, and that's how the Quran came, is that he would get these thoughts or revelations, and he would recite them over and over again until he had them memorized, and then that would become a verse in the Quran. They weren't written down until several hundred years after Muhammad. Anyway, he goes back to his wife, and he makes several statements that he's concerned that he was tormented by a jinn, which was a, you know, a demon spirit, or that he was being here he says in the hadith al-Bukhari, which is the one of the more popular hadiths, says then the apostle returned, and with the inspiration his neck muscles twitching from terror, till he entered in upon Khadija, his wife. Cover me, cover me. They covered him till his fear had left. Oh, Khadija, what's wrong with me? Oh, Khadija, I see light. I hear sounds. I fear I am mad. A couple different times he went to the top of a mountain and was about to throw himself off. And then the spirit appeared to him again. He decided to call the spirit Gabriel. Khadija took him to her uncle, who was that Ebionite Christian priest, and that Ebionite sect was a heretical sect. And anyway, he said, well, maybe it was the spirit that appeared to Moses. That uncle died a week later, so Muhammad really didn't have any guidance other than himself and the spirit, and that was in 610 AD, and then 622 AD is when he decided to reveal this. He went into Mecca, and he was excited about it. I mean, very similar to somebody that just got into a new multi-level scheme, and he's telling all his friends. Well, the Jews there were not excited about this new religion. Muhammad, sort of in a Baha'i faith type of way, had integrated different features of Christian faith, Zoroastrian faith, Jewish faith, and the Arab pagan faith all together, thinking that people would all be excited. Well, they weren't. He fled to Medina in 622, and this is called the flight. And Arabs and Muslims cite this as year 1, 622, in the Arab calendar. He gets into Medina, he doesn't...
We'll be back in just a minute with William Federer, right here. American Freedom Network.
Constitutional Moments are brought to you throughout the day through the generosity of C&C Prototype Machine, Boulder, Colorado.
Bill of Rights, Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots, biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom. Good Sabbath.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies, is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennett Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups or government programs. The American Freedom Network is not sponsored by advertisers demanding content or programming control. The American Freedom Network is solely funded by you, the listener. Please help keep the American Freedom Network on the air by purchasing one of our sponsors' fine products or by calling 1-800-205-6245 to make a donation. The American Freedom Network needs your help.
Stand back here at the American Freedom Network. Our guest this morning, William Federer, and we're talking about his book on the Muslim faith. Bill, why don't you go ahead and bring us up? You were to the point. You were about 6:22 when we had to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. Well, the title of the book is What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran: A History of Islam in the United States, and I give the 1400-year history of Islam. And Muhammad, in 622, fled to Medina and made a treaty with the Jews that were there. There were three tribes of Jews in Medina, and since Muhammad was weak, with few followers, he needed their help. Later he became strong and decided to break the treaty with them. But then the Meccans came and attacked Medina. By this time, the Jewish tribes realized that Muhammad's faith was not compatible with theirs, and they basically favored the Meccans and were hoping they would win. Well, the Meccans didn't win. Muhammad drove them off, and then Muhammad decided to quarter the Jews into their portion of the city for 25 days, assaulted them. Finally, they surrendered. And in the Battle of the Trenches, Muhammad took these men out, dug a trench in the marketplace, and chopped off 700 heads of Jewish men, took the women and children as captives, and sold them. He and his followers then began the conquest of Arabia. And in the Quran and in the Hadith are the stories that his 15 wives and the Ghazi warriors that fought alongside of him remembered him saying. And so they were just fragments that were written down several hundred years later and compiled. And so that's called the Hadith, but it's taken with equal authority as the Quran. But the Hadith tells these stories of Muhammad going into different areas and, killing the Jews there. One of his verses, the Hadith, Al-Bukhari, Volume 9, Book 84, it says, Muhammad said, whoever changes his Islamic religion, kill him. So you were free to become a Muslim, but you couldn't. And then he says, Muhammad said, no Muslim should be killed for killing a kafir. And the word kafir means infidel. So no Muslim should be killed for killing an infidel. He dies in 632 A.D., so he's only really in power for 10 years, but he was a religious leader, a civil leader, and a military leader, all three. And so the difficulty we have today is we're trying to separate the militancy away from the religious side. We're trying to dissect Muhammad himself. And so that's the difficulty. Jesus was just a religious leader. He wasn't civil, and he wasn't military. But Muhammad, he had his 15 wives. It's quite interesting for somebody in the West to read through the Quran because it talks about, him taking turns with his wives, and his one wife felt fat, so she would give her turn to another wife, and then all the wives got upset because he was, spending the evening with a woman who wasn't one of his wives, and then he had concubines, and then he had a fifth of the women taken in battle. So, and he would say things like, married women are forbidden for you unless they were taken in war. And so he had to read through that a couple different times. He's giving this verse that says, you're not supposed to fool around with married women unless they're married women that you took in war. Then it's okay. And one place he said, you can marry wives for beauty, for wealth, or for religion. Marry at least one for religion. Another place he said you can, you know, have two, three, four wives, as many as you can, you know, support. But to a Western mind, that's pretty, you know, unusual here. But he goes on to conquer all of Arabia, so from the Mediterranean down to the Indian Ocean. When he dies, his caliphs, who are the apostles that were fighting together with him in battles, they conquered all of North Africa, and people forget that North Africa was Christian. There were 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa, and they were all conquered. Augustine of Hippo was from North Africa. Gospel of Mark was written by Mark the Evangelist, who went and started the Coptic Christian Church in Egypt, which was very very large civilization there for centuries until the Muslims swept through, and that's when the Apostle Mark, or the, you know, the Mark's bones were taken from Egypt to Venice, and that's St. Mark's Cathedral. If anybody's seen any pictures of Venice, that's the big piazza, the big patio with the big church in the background. That's St. Mark's Church, and all the gondolas going by, and it has the bones of, you know, St. Mark that were taken from Egypt when the Muslims swept through. The Muslims went through the Holy Land, which was Byzantine, Christian, and Jewish. In 638 is when the, after a four-month bloody siege, the Byzantine patriarch surrenders Jerusalem to the Muslims. Caliph Umar comes in and agrees not to kill them if they pay the jizra tax, an annual tax, and agree to be dhimmi status, which is like Jim Crow laws, where they say that if a Muslim walks in a room, the Christian or Jew has to stand up. If there's a narrow road, the Christian and Jew has to get out of the way. The Christian and Jew cannot dress like a Muslim. If the Muslims destroy a Jewish synagogue or a Christian church, they cannot rebuild it on pain of death. The Muslims said that the Christians and Jews cannot own weapons, cannot own horses. It's basically the establishment of Jim Crow status for the Christians and Jews. But I thought one of the things was interesting was when the Muslims conquered Persia, which is Iran. The Persians had been at war with the Byzantine Christians for decades, and matter of fact, the Zoroastrian Persians destroyed every church in the Holy Land except the one in Bethlehem, because it had a mural of the Magi on the wall, the three wise men who came from, you know, Persia, the Zoroastrians. Anyway, so both of these empires were weakened because of the that war, and the Muslims had a new military advantage of the stirrup. That's right, the stirrup for the horse. The stirrup was invented originally by the Mongolian nomadic tribes in Mongolia, where they would tie a rope around a horse and leave two loops at the end for their big toes, because they would ride barefoot, and this would help them keep balance. That made its way down to China in the 5th century A.D., and the Chinese made that loop bigger so you could put your whole foot in. And that made its way to Persia in the 6th century, where they put a metal bar in there and basically made it into the stirrup that we have today. And the advantage was that now you could fight on horseback. Prior to then, you would basically ride on a horseback, but then when you got to the battle, you'd get off and fight. This made it so that you could put the full power of a galloping horse behind your sword, and so the Muslims came up with this curved sword, so you could slice somebody in half while you're riding at a full gallop. And with these, they went on these Ghazi raids, these terror raids, where they would go into these communities, and the people would be so terrorized that they would surrender, they'd submit. And the word Islam means submission, and a Muslim is somebody who has submitted. Anyway, in 634 AD, the Muslims were fighting the Zoroastrians in Persia, and they conquered a large area. And the emperor, whose name was Yazgard, sent out an emissary and said, "Our emperor asks if you would be agreeable to peace on the condition that the Tigris River should be the boundary between you and us, so that whatever is on the eastern side of the Tigris remains ours, whatever you have gained on the western side is yours, and if this does not satisfy your land hunger, then nothing would satisfy you." The Muslim commander, Sa'd ibn Waqqas, responded that Muslims were not hungry for land, that they were fighting to convert the Persians to Islam, and added that if the Persian emperor wanted peace, it was open to him to accept Islam and pay the jizra. The alternative was, if it was not acceptable, that the question could only be settled by the sword. Well, now this changed warfare forever. Because prior to this, warfare was simply imperial conquest. You know, the Romans or Alexander the Great just wanting to get more territory. I mean, even the Romans, when they conquered an area, they would take the god of that area and stick it in their pantheon and sort of, you know, absorb it. But they didn't force the people to give up their god. Where here, the Muslims were beginning this new type of warfare that was ideological. Anyway, they then swept through across the Strait of Gibraltar and went into Spain and conquered all of Spain, and then were in France. And in 732, Muhammad died in 632, so 100 years after Muhammad's death, the Muslims were in France, and they were finally stopped by Charles Martel, the grandfather of Charlemagne. And then they came around the other side of the Mediterranean all the way up to the gates of Constantinople. And five successive years they tried conquering Constantinople, but the Greeks had a military advantage called Greek fire, where they would take sawdust and oil and mix it into brass containers and pump it up under pressure and spray it like napalm on the enemy ships. And the Muslims didn't have a defense for this, and so they went back and decided to moderate their religion. In other words, they said, we'll still conquer the world, but maybe it'll have to wait until the last days. And so that was the beginning of moderate Islam. See, both moderate and violent Muslims think they will conquer the world. The moderate one just thinks they'll conquer the world in the distant future, where the violent one thinks now. Muhammad divided the world into two houses, the House of Islam and the House of War. In Arabic, it's pronounced Dar al-Islam and Dar al-Harb, H-A-R-B. And so they see a Muslim as somebody who has submitted, and Islam means submission, and they think there will be world peace when the whole world has submitted to the will of Allah or become Muslim. So where we think of world peace as mutual coexistence between people that believe different things, a Muslim, a faithful Muslim, thinks that world peace will happen when the whole world has submitted to Allah or become Muslim. So it's important that we define these definitions when we're talking about wanting to achieve world peace. Anyway, after the Muslims were stopped at Constantinople and in France, they moved eastward into the rest of Persia, northern India, Russia, China, Indonesia, Java, all the way to the Philippines. But as they were going across the Asian continent, they ran into the Mongols. Now, Genghis Khan was a Mongol. Genghis Khan had the Mongolian Empire, which was the largest contiguous land empire in world history. It went all the way from Europe to Japan, from India all the way up to Russia, Persia, you know, all Ukraine, Mongolia. It was huge. And the Mongols had a style of warfare where they would ride into town, kill the men, take the women, and plunder, take the riches. Well, when these Mongols began to run into these Muslims and have battles, it never occurred to the Mongols to force the Muslims to change their religion. So that when they would kill or capture, you know, and conquer a Muslim area, they would just let them keep their religion. And after a while, the Mongols learned about this new religion and said, you know, we can continue to ride into town and kill the men, when we can continue to take the women, and we can continue to plunder, only now we do it with the blessing of Allah. And so one of the tribes of the Mongols, called the Turks, the Turkish Mongols, they converted en masse. The whole entire tribe converted and became Muslim. And they decided to spread it back into its violent mode, back eastward, or westward, rather. And so they basically, the Turks, the Mongolian Turks, the Muslims, took over all of the Arabic world, all of the rest of the Muslim world, and finally began to come into Asia Minor, which had been the Byzantine Empire. They conquered the Seleuk Turks. Little interesting side note, they conquered some of the cities in Asia Minor, one of them being Myra. Now, Myra was the capital of that province where St. Nicholas had lived. St. Nicholas was the most popular Byzantine saint in the Eastern Orthodox Christianity. And when the Seleuk, which was another term for the Muslim Turks, when the Seleuks came in there, they would kill the Christians and turn churches into mosques. And so the people in Myra dug up the bones of St. Nicholas, sent them over to Italy. And so He was introduced to Western Europe, and the gift-giving on the anniversary of his death became popular in Western Europe. And finally, the immigrants brought that practice of celebrating the gift-giving on the anniversary of St. Nicholas's death to New York. The Dutch brought it over, and they pronounced St. Nicholas Sant Niklaus. And so, in other words, the fact that we have a Santa Claus is a byproduct of jihad in the 11th century. The word assassin, that one of the Muslim tribes would have their men take daggers and go into the camp of their enemies and kill them, whether they were in their temple or mosque, and strike fear into them. And so they call them hashashins.
We'll be back in just a moment with Bill Federer here.
Veterans, use your VA benefits to buy a home. Take advantage of today's buyer's market. Jamie LaRue with Destiny Lending here. Perfect credit and down payment are not required for a VA home loan. For 10 years, I've had the honor of helping veterans achieve home ownership through a VA mortgage. Get more information on a VA loan, call Jamie at Destiny Lending, 970-214-1374. That's 970-214-1374.
I'm speaking with Angela Smith of Destiny Lending. Can investment properties be profitable?
Yes. Today's rentals are cash flowing. Bank-owned properties are selling at 70% of value. With mortgage rates still at a 40-year low and little to no down payment needed, now is definitely the time to buy.
So call Angela Smith at Destiny Lending, 970-988-3840. Call Angela now, 970-988-3840.
An emergency preparedness plan for your home, car, school, and office is a must. Knowing how to store water safely, survive extreme temperature changes, provide reliable shelter, first aid, and sanitation is critical. Knowing where to get the best lights, radios, and other supplies is easy. Ferris Survival, located at 3366 South Broadway, is a professional, reputable, full-service business providing realistic preparedness supplies at affordable prices. Stop by, go online, or call 303-781-0343, 866-781-0343.
The Kelly Healing Arts Center, located in Fort Collins, provides exceptional, individualized natural health treatment plans utilizing the best in natural therapies. If you're looking for quality health professionals that will listen to your needs, give honest advice, and provide quality health care, call 970-223-7425. That's 970-223-7425. To learn more about Kelly Healing Arts Center, go to kindermedicine.com. Discover the best of what natural medicine has to offer.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of The Green Herb.
Is it me, or have you noticed that personal service is becoming a thing of the past? Is a big store with untrained personnel, or going to a vitamin store and finding several brands of the same herbal product, all at different prices? You don't need to be an herbal expert at The Green Herb. We'll gladly help you decide which of The Green Herb's exclusive products will work for you and work better than anything you buy elsewhere. And we'll give you an old-fashioned money-back guarantee. Come by The Green Herb, located in Wheatridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB, that's 888-765-4372, or go to our website at www.thegreenherb.com. It's The Green Herb's policy to give you small-town service in the big city, and be sure to listen to The Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
William Federer. But before we go on, Abel, I want you to give out your web page and tell our listeners how to get copies of your book.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Stan. My website is AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. And then a toll-free telephone number is 1-888-USA-WORD. 1-888-USA-WORD. And TheAmericanMinute.com, I also send out a free daily email called The American Minute. And little short historical vignettes of what happened on each date in American history.
Well, they're really exciting and so worthwhile. Anyway, you go ahead and pick up your story there.
Well, I was just tracing the 1400 year history of Islam, and in the 1100s is when the Turks had become Muslim and began to move westward again and began to come into Asia Minor. Now, Asia Minor is where the seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation were, and they were all eventually wiped out by the invading Muslims. This was the area where the Apostle John taught. The Apostle Paul evangelized there, where during the Roman Empire period, they had up by the Black Sea an area where there's volcanic ash for the earth, and they dug it out, and 60,000 people were Christians, and they lived in these caves to avoid the persecution by the Romans. Well, all this area eventually got taken over by the Muslims. There was Tamerlane, who was a Ghazi warrior. He was a Turk who had been who was a Muslim, and he conquered the area of Georgia, not the state in America, but the area over by the Black Sea. And I mean, stories of him burying 4,000 Christians that he'd captured alive. That 2,000 in the city of Iztafar, where he cemented 2,000 people into a wall that he built. Tamerlane was said he wanted to kill the infidel, and so he asked his general where the infidels were, and his general said, "Well, there are a lot of infidels in India," and so Tamerlane went down to Delhi, India, and killed over 100,000 and had towers of skulls that he had. He told his men to come back with two skulls each, and so they just chop off heads, and simply because of religion. And these Mongols who had become Muslim began to spread through Asia Minor. Finally, in 1453, they conquered Constantinople. There were a couple sultans worth noting. One is Murat the First. Murat the First, in 1365, began to come across Asia Minor and instituted the Dev Sherma. Now, the Dev Sherma, or the blood tax, was where they would collect the children from the Christian towns and cities that they had captured. And they would take the boys from 7 to 14 years old and force them into the Muslim army to become Muslim soldiers, and they would put them on the front lines when they would attack the next Christian city. So they would use the children of the Christians to attack the Christians. They were called Janissaries, which meant new army. And these Janissaries could not go home after the battle was over. They had to stay with the Sultan. They couldn't marry. They were the first full-time military in Europe since the Roman Legion times. When the Muslims would fight, they'd go back home afterwards. And, of course, in the feudal Europe, people would fight, and then they'd go back to their farms. But these Janissaries were a full-time army. And since all they had to do was train in military, they became very feared and very skilled soldiers. So the irony is that a lot of the Bosnian and Romanians that today are Muslim, they had been Christian, but they had just been conquered and taken and forced to become Muslim and then used to fight the Christians. Anyway, with the help of these Janissaries, the Muslims conquered Constantinople in 1453. Little interesting insight, Mehmet II was the Sultan. He was 21 years old when he took over, and he read Alexander the Great and wanted to model himself after that as a great conqueror. Anyway, Mehmet II wanted to get his hands on the most powerful military technology of the day, gunpowder. And he had they had just invented corned gunpowder, where they would take the charcoal and the sulfur and the saltpeter, and they used to mix it on the battlefields, and it was all inconsistent and would just blow a bunch of smoke, basically. But corned gunpowder is where they would mix it in a paste and let it dry and then crack it into granules, and then it would explode 30% more powerful. It blew up the cheap cannons that they used to have, so they had to come up with the whole science of metallurgy and make cannons. So there was a Hungarian cannon maker who offered his services to the Byzantine Empire, but they could not afford to pay him. The Byzantine Empire had been sacked by the Fourth Crusade by the Venetian city-states, and so they didn't have enough money. Anyway, this Hungarian cannon maker named Urban defects and goes to work for Mehmet II. And he takes the bells from the Byzantine churches that the Muslims had destroyed and melts them down and builds the largest cannons in the world. One of them was over 27 feet long. It could shoot a 1,200-pound stone cannonball over a mile. You could hear the thing 10 miles away. It took them 140 days to drag this to the walls of Constantinople. And, of course, I can't help but reflect of, you know, nuclear scientists from Russia that Russia could no longer pay, and they defected, and some of them went to work in Iran, and here's this guy in Iran who's made comments about wanting to build the largest cannons in the world, only to shoot nuclear weapons. And anyway, then Constantinople had their share of globalists. You say globalists? Yeah, the Venetian and Genoa city-states, the Italian city. Italy wasn't Italy. Italy was a whole bunch of little city-states, and they traded. And they viewed the Byzantine Empire as a competitor. And so they would try to undermine the Byzantine Empire, so much so they would actually trade with the Muslims supplying military goods for a buck. You know, to make money, they'd sell military goods to the Muslims who would turn around and use it against the Byzantine Empire.
Sort of like the United States doing everything they can to build up the economy of communist China, despite the fact that we will very, very soon be at war with communist China. Like, nothing really has changed, has it?
Well, no, you know, and these Venetian and Genoan city-states, they weren't interested in preserving Western civilization. They were just interested in a bottom line.
Sure.
And actually, the Fourth Crusade, which the Crusades were the Byzantine patriarch begged Western Europe to send help because the Muslims were conquering all this area and making the Christians into demi-status, second-class citizens, and killing and so forth. So the Western Europe, it was Pope Urban in 1095, who finally sent some help, and that was the Crusades. And the First Crusade took back Jerusalem, and then they lost Jerusalem after 100 years. And then, but the Fourth Crusade, instead of fighting the Muslims, it got derailed by the Venetians and attacked Constantinople, the city that they should have been trying to defend, and they sacked it and stripped it of all of its 1,000 years worth of wealth that it accumulated, destroyed its defenses, and the Venetians ruled it for 57 years and outsourced all the business to their city in Italy. And so when the Venetians were finally driven out of Constantinople, not only was the place a wreck, their money was gone, but all their businesses had been outsourced, you know, all the trade, because it was a big trade port. And so then the Byzantines had to raise taxes to try to repair their defenses, and so the unbearable taxes. But long story short, it was these these globalists, you know, Venetian and Genoan city-states that basically undermined the city.
And we'll be back here in just a moment or two here at the American Freedom Network.
Tapes of the preceding show are available by calling 1-800-205-6245, the American Freedom Network.
The Kelly Healing Arts Center, located in Fort Collins, provides exceptional individualized natural health treatment plans utilizing the best in natural therapies. If you are looking for quality health professionals that will listen to your needs, give honest advice, and provide quality health care, then call 970-223-7425. Again, 970-223-7425. To learn more about the Kelly Healing Arts Center, go to kindermedicine.com. Discover the best of what natural medicine has to offer.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tom Phillips, founder of the Green Herb.
The people who are controlling the government of America are the same people who are trying to control your family's health care. You can sit quietly by and accept their plan, or you can take responsibility for your health. What would happen if you could no longer obtain the medications you're now taking? Would you be forced to join the ranks of corrupt agents just to purchase the medicine? If you're one of the thousands of concerned citizens who would like to know more about a natural way, God's way to help, drop by the Green Herb for a natural solution and all the information you need to make an intelligent decision. Or go to our website, www.thegreenherb.com. Come by the Green Herb, located in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, on the I-70 Frontage Road North, 1 mile west of Kipling, or call 888-765-HERB, that's 888-765-4372, and be sure to listen to the Green Herb Show with Linda and Dr. Cass every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on KHNC.
You can help support our severely wounded and paralyzed veterans by booking your travel through www.tripandtourtravel.com. When you book plane tickets, hotel or car rentals, cruises or event tickets through tripandtourtravel.com, you receive competitive rates and the assurance that you're helping a soldier in need. We support Salute America's Heroes. That's tripandtourtravel.com. 303-526-4444.
Here at the American Freedom Network, our guest, William Federer and Bill. Do you have a telephone number people could call if they wanted to purchase your book?
Sure. It's 1-888-USA-WORD. That's 1-888-USA-WORD.
Okay, fine. And so basically, what we're seeing is just, well, what's happened all through the centuries.
Well, it is, and it's interesting. When Constantinople finally fell, this is a 1,000-year-old Christian city. It was started by Constantine. It had the largest churches in the world. One was St. Sophia's. It was as big as the Vatican, 186 feet high, 102 foot across, dome way up there. The Muslims turned it into a mosque. I mean, can you imagine if they turned the Vatican into a mosque? Well, that's equivalent to what they did for the Byzantine church. Anyway, once Constantinople fell, it cut off the trade routes from Western Europe to get to India and China. And so the Western Europeans tried to come up with an alternative route to get to India and China. And so in 1492, a guy named Columbus said, "I know a shortcut, sail west." And Columbus thought the islands he discovered were around India, so he named the inhabitants the Indians. Thought that Haiti was Japan and thought that Cuba was the tip of China. It wasn't until his fourth voyage that he realized he hadn't found the place. But it highlights the fact that Columbus would have never set sail had not the Muslims conquered Constantinople and cut off the land trade routes to India and China. They were trading with, since Marco Polo won, you know, in 1271, Marco Polo was the Italian that basically went across the Gobi Desert and the China Silk Road and helped open up the trade routes there. But anyway, the Muslims continued westward, and some of the interesting stories that I pull out of history is, for example, in 1571 was the Battle of Lepanto, where the Muslims not only controlled all of the southern Mediterranean, they controlled all of the eastern Mediterranean, they controlled all the northeastern Mediterranean, and the only place they didn't control was the, you know, Italy and France and Spain. And so in 1571 they were trying to conquer that when the Pope had everybody in Europe pray and got Spain and Naples and the Knights of Malta, all these people together to fight the Muslims at the Battle of Lepanto, and the Christian Holy League won and destroyed all but 30 of the several hundred of the Muslim ships. And so that was the furthest westward that the Muslims went in the Navy. But the Christian forces didn't capitalize on it, didn't free Greece up. And so Greece was still held under the Muslim control. And then in 1600, an interesting little side note, there was a young British soldier, English soldier by the name of John Smith, who left England and went down to Italy and joined up with the Austrians and went to fight the Muslims in Hungary. And several battles. One was where the Muslims had taken over a Christian fortress and hung the heads of all the defenders over the sides. And during the siege, the Muslims, the Christians were trying to retake the fortress. The Muslims said, "Well, you put up your strongest soldier and we'll put up ours and they can have a fight," sort of a David and Goliath type challenge. Anyway, they picked John Smith, and he won and cut off the head of the Muslim, and the Muslim's friend wanted to regain the honor, so he fought him, and John Smith cut off his head, and then it happened a third time. And then there was a battle shortly thereafter where about 10,000 Christians were killed, and John Smith was left wounded on the battlefield, dying. They took him and found he was still alive. They ended up selling him as a slave. Now he was down in Constantinople. He has the iron ring around his neck, and he's out working in the fields. One day the master was out there beating him. Nobody else was around. He jumps the master, kills him, dresses himself in the master's clothes, gets on the guy's horse and rides off for several weeks till he gets to Russia, runs into a Muscovite garrison who takes the iron ring off his neck. He finds his way through Poland, back to Transylvania and Hungary, and fights the Muslims again. Afterwards, he gets a reward, goes down into the Mediterranean, fights the Muslim Barbary pirates, captures a couple of ships, finally makes it back to England in 1605. And in 1606, he is sent to help found the first permanent English colony in the New World, Jamestown. And that's why John Smith is called Captain John Smith, because he got that title by fighting the Muslims. James Oglethorpe, that founded the colony of Georgia, fought the Muslims in Serbia in 717 A.D. The Muslims had taken over Belgrade. Three different times they sacked Belgrade. There was a Serbian migrations where the patriarch led several hundred thousand Serbians to go to Austria. And the second time that the Christian forces were taken back, James Oglethorpe fought for the Prince of Savoy, and after the battle went back to England, then decided to start a colony in America for poor debtors to get a second chance in life, and he founded the colony of Georgia. But it's interesting to see the intersections of history. Then the Muslims had their Barbary pirates who were attacking American ships as well as European and French and Dutch and Spanish ships. And three different times there was battles with Tripoli. And finally, the second time, it was Thomas Jefferson that sent our Marines in there to capture the Pasha and force him to make peace on our terms. John Quincy Adams writes later in 1830 how the Muslims' idea of a treaty is simply a ceasefire. And John Quincy Adams said that, yes, we had our Marines go in there, and the Pasha signed a treaty to not attack American ships, but no sooner had he signed the treaty than he began to plot to begin doing it again. And so the Muslims don't have the same idea of treaties as we do in the West. Anyway, finally, it wasn't until the French and the Dutch bombarded Algiers and the French took over Algiers that the piracy stopped. And then in the 1800s, the Ottoman Muslim Empire began to not keep up with the military advances of Western Europe. And so Romania, Bulgaria broke away, had their own countries. Greece finally broke away. We don't realize you see pictures of Greece and the Acropolis, the tour travel guides always have the picture of the Acropolis, this temple, Greek temple that's blown to pieces and on top of a hill. Well, that was the Muslims had turned that old Greek temple into a mosque, and that's where they stored their gunpowder and their weapons. That's where they would store their gunpowder and weapons is in their mosques. Anyway, when the Venetians were helping to free the city, a cannonball hit it and blew it up.
Well, we're out of time. Our guest has been Bill Federer. Once again, the title of your book?
It's called What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. A fascinating overview. AmericanMinute.com is my website, and 888-USA-WORD.
The Watchman's Cry is a fascinating new book by Obadiah Frank that makes the study of the last days understandable. Using clear explanations, the notion that the church will be raptured before the time of the Great Tribulation is proven a dangerous deception. The Watchman's Cry is available from the American Freedom Network for only $10 postpaid. Call 1-800-205-6245.
Insulin, Our Silent Killer, is a new book written by scientist Thomas Smith. In this self-help manual for diabetes and other blood sugar handling problems, you will learn the true cause of this disease and, more importantly, what you can do about it.
Insulin, Our Silent Killer is available from the American Freedom Network for only $25 postpaid. Call 1-800-205-6245.
It's extensively referenced with helpful tables to learn what foods are good and which ones are not. This is a must-read for everyone.
No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Article 1, Section 10.
The Beth Messiah Congregation invites you to come and experience a Messianic Roots biblically-based congregational fellowship as we observe God's Shabbat in Messiah Yeshua. Praise and worship services begin at 10:30 a.m., followed by an Oneg Shabbat meal, Midrash, and fellowship. Beth Messiah Congregation is located at 8333 Acoma Way in North Denver. You can find out more information by calling 1-800-205-6245. Everyone's welcome, so join us this Shabbat. And Shabbat Shalom. Good Sabbath.
Well, I stand here at the American Freedom Network, and this is the time when I do want to mention that my ministry, which is on the different radio stations 5 hours a day, is primarily listener-supported. And if you agree that there's a problem and you'd like to help us, we'd love to hear from you. My number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We have a four-tape set on the Muslim faith, what you really update on the Muslim faith. And we have a four-tape set called Islam, the Religion of Doom, which, of course, is the analysis of the Muslim faith by Craig Wynn. You have to understand what the Muslim faith really is. Now, fortunately, most Muslims are not really good Muslims. They do not embrace jihad, but there's enough of them that do. And, of course, many more are being enticed to join the radical Muslim movement because of America's invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq, and we are occupying those countries. After all, we went into Afghanistan to catch Osama bin Laden, but we did try to catch him. He escaped into Pakistan. So why didn't we attack Pakistan or go in and get him? Because we never wanted to get Osama bin Laden. We wanted an excuse to occupy Afghanistan and then to occupy Iraq and then to go to war with Iran and of course, precipitate World War III. That's what it was all about. But we could never tell the people in America what it was really about. They wouldn't want to go along with it. Just as they want to keep their sovereignty. We can't tell them the true purpose behind the North American Union. It's an idea to do away with American sovereignty, to mold us into, first of all, a trade group, and then into a new North American community like the European Union, and then to unite the world. But you see, the elite know so much better than we common people. That's what it's really all about. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to go to our website and get the material we have there on immigration. We carry a wonderful book on the Minutemen by Dr. Jerome Corsi, which really lays out this whole agenda behind the North American Union. You need to get our new four-tape sets on so many of the subjects at hand. The secret societies, the Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones. You need to get our four-tape set on the secret government or the secret government special. You need to get our four-tape set on what energizes this whole thing, the supernatural, Aleister Crowley, Satanism and Deliverance. Understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. If you'd like to get one of our catalogs, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We have catalogs on with various things that you may be interested in getting. But the important thing is you understand what is really going on in the world today. If you'd like a copy of our latest newsletter, and it gives you, it includes the Fitzgerald Report, which has been actively suppressed for 53 years since the report was introduced in the Congressional Record back in August of 1953. We can't let the American people know that the elite are suppressing treatments for cancer. You need to get our four tape sets on mercury. And, of course, mercury produces Alzheimer's disease and autism. But we can't let the American people know that they know they're destroying the minds of our children. You might begin to understand that there really are people who have a different worldview. Because, of course, they worship a different God. and they're destroying the minds of our children. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for our leaders, but pray for Radio Liberty.
Now you can reach the American Freedom Network at our new P.O. Box, 1750 Johnstown, Colorado, 80534, or online at AmeriFree.com.
If cholesterol, high blood pressure, angina, atherosclerotic plaque, or stroke are a concern for you or your loved one, or you want to strengthen your heart, increase stamina, and promote overall cardiovascular health, then join the Heart Technology team. Heart Technology, Linus Pauling's recommended vitamin C therapies, is the answer to your concern. Don't wait until it's too late. For more information and to order, call Dennett Daniels at 1-800-205-6245. Heart Technology, it's natural, it's effective, it's inexpensive, and it's guaranteed. 1-800-205-6245.
The American Freedom Network is not funded or supported by special interest groups,